Welcome to Green and Red, scrappy politics for scrappy people, a regular podcast on radical, environmental and anti-capitalist politics, brought to you by Bob Bazanko and Scott Parkin.
Welcome to the silky smooth sounds of the Green and Red podcast. I'm your co-host, Scott Parkin, in Berkeley, California. And as always, I am joined by
Bob Bazanko, and I'm in Ohio right now. Before we get started, Scott, I have a question for you. Have you ever had a worm in your brain?
No. Sometimes I feel like I have a hole in my brain, but I've never really had a worm in my brain.
I wonder if maybe he drank tequila and the worm wasn't dead yet.
And it just migrated up? I think the whole hole in the head theory really applies to a lot of Kennedy and JFK supporters, that those that we talk, that we often are, have Twitter back and forth or that you've debated on the show. I think the hole in the head is a really good working theory about a lot of problems with those people.
Yeah, they're not the brightest bulbs. The elevator doesn't go all the way to the top floor. You know, that kind of
thing. It doesn't seem to be working once it gets there because there's a big hole there, right?
A few fries short of a happy meal. What's funny, even now, after Bobby Kennedy's been on the scene for, 6 months, I still see people who would call themselves unabashedly, call themselves radical or progressive or whatever, who still support the guy. I've seen people who are like really upset, as they should be, about Israel, who support him. You ever hear what this guy says about Israel?
I live in a bastion of hippie anti-vaxxer thought and support. And it's actually amazing how much in Berkeley vehicles with Ukraine flags, Black Lives Matter signs somewhere, which we support, and then like RFK 2024 signs. They do at the nearby freeway, they actually do a bannering for RFK 2024 over the 580. Yeah, so we don't have holes in our head here, but we do have fire in our hearts, and we are very fired up about what's going on in the world, and we're going to talk about that today. As always, we're going to kick off with This Week in Radical History. There's a lot of radical history that has happened over the centuries that we could talk about, but we are trying to keep it a little bit relevant to the moment. The first one I want to talk about was May 8th, 1970, where the Hard Hat Riot took place in New York after 200 construction workers attacked 1,000 mostly young people protesting the Vietnam War in an operation organized by the New York State AFL-CIO in conjunction with the Nixon White House. We recently saw a mob of Zionists attack students at UCLA. There have been a lot of provocative Zionist individuals and groups doing things in Chicago and New York. I actually believe this week a Zionist actually ran over an anti-genocide protester while they were protesting a Columbia trustee's house. There's a lot of violence being instigated, like counter-protests instigated by other forces, of whether it's organized Israel groups or what have you.
You mean outside agitators?
Outside agitators.
They really are the real outside agitators.
Yeah, yeah. Dangerous outside agitators.
Yeah, violent, armed insurrectionists.
Right, exactly. Or counter-insurrectionists.
Counter-insurrectionists.
The other one I wanted to mention, we touched on this briefly when we talked about Kent State, but on May 15th, 1970, also in 1970, was Jackson State, where two African-American students were actually murdered during a protest there. We've actually done a couple of episodes now on campus unrest. We probably won't talk about that as much tonight, but I did want to mention that the anniversary of Jackson State is later this week. And then the other one I wanted to talk about was May 17th, 1968, which is when the Catonsville Nine break into the Maryland Draft Center. They burnt 600 draft files. We always like to do a little bit of pitch in support of sabotage and things like that. And so a lot of these draft resistance groups actually did amazing work. Some of them went to prison for it, in fact, in solidarity with the Catonsville Nine.
There's a movie, maybe Martin Sheen was in it, I think, The Trial of Catonsville Nine. Yeah, it's really one of the more important actions. They busted into the draft center, destroyed all the draft records and everything like that. One of the great acts of civil disobedience in that era. I only have one thing I want to mention, which is an intro, which we'll loop back to. But this Sunday, May 12th, is Mother's Day. And it's become a holiday for florists and Hallmark and buying restaurant gift cards and flowers and all that kind of stuff. But Mother's Day actually began with very political intentions. Julia Ward Howe in 1870 wrote a Mother's Day proclamation, which was a response to the Civil War, which had just ended a few years earlier, with its catastrophic loss of life, over 1 million dead. And so it was really an appeal to women because in the 19th century, a woman's role was to maintain domestic tranquility and peace and all that kind of stuff. And so it was an appeal to women to try to prevent men from going to war. So it was actually created as an anti-war celebration. And over the years, it's taken on a lot of socialist meaning. Socialists have run with it to use it as kind of an impetus for women's equality, for feminist issues and things like that, not just as a reason for more consumerism. And we're going to loop back to that in a few minutes, because I think the role of women who call themselves radical, women who call themselves feminist, and supporting a lot of stuff which really actually harms women, and in fact, maybe even kills women, should be discussed. So we'll get back to that. But for those of you out there, happy Mother's Day if you celebrate. Happy Radical Mother's Day. And they use this as a reason to end war. Hell, let's go for it. Let's go for the whole nine yards, right?
And speaking of war and women, I want to talk about one of the biggest purveyors, or was one of the biggest purveyors of war. And yeah, but as a big proponent of it is Hillary Clinton, who actually did an interview the last couple of days criticizing the pro-Palestinian protests and says that many young people that she's spoken to don't know very much about the history of the Middle East. Or frankly, this is a quote, or frankly, about the history of in many areas of the world, which to me says that she's, doing multiple things here. One, she's trying to distract from her own inconvenient history of bombing and selling arms to escalate conflict and chaos in the region. Hillary was in the Senate and backed the push to war by Bush in 2003, 2002, 2003 in Iraq, totally bought the whole weapons of mass destruction story that the Bush administration was telling, although if she goes back to it, she'll say that she didn't really believe it, but she did vote for it, as along with Biden
That's
and many other
the
members
reason
of.
she lost the 2008 nomination. That was her kryptonite, right? Obama beat her up with that, her vote on the war. Yeah.
And then the other huge conflict, which she was like very much had a hand in, was the overthrow of Gaddafi and the fall of Libya, which has actually led to a large amount of chaos in the region. It's led to the not a good radicalization of people in the region who have taken up arms to go after anyone who disagrees with their view of radical Islam. And part of that is provoked by Hillary and Obama and others instigating this meltdown of Libyan society.
Her fingerprints are also all over Haiti and Honduras, both of which have been in the news, especially Haiti. She and Bill created immense suffering there. They Aristide, who was an actual reformer, they helped get rid of, and then they overthrew government in Honduras, and which led to all kinds of atrocities, including many against environmental workers. And what's really striking, because Hillary Clinton likes to represent women all the time, right? She's always talking about that. I think it's funny when, who was it, when Liz Truss was briefly the Prime Minister of England for what, a week? Who lasted longer, her or Scaramucci? I can't remember. But Hillary put out
It's
a
a
tweet.
tie, maybe it's a tie.
Hillary put out a tweet like how great it was to have a woman as the Prime Minister, right? And she talks a lot about supporting women. And I think, it's in addition to her statement, which is incredibly condescending and par for the course for her. Anybody who knows me, like when you talk about Hillary, it sets me off because I find her one of the more despicable, her husband and Obama, but really one of the more despicable people in modern American political history who ran. She's the reason we have Trump. She's the reason we have the Supreme Court we have. She ran the most dismal campaign, just shockingly dismal. It's amazing too, isn't it, how the Republicans will turn on like Liz Cheney, who was like Ms. Republican forever, right? Just such a loyal, hardcore. Her father's the Darth Vader of the Republican Party. And they've turned on here her. And whereas liberals and Democrats to this day swear by Hillary Clinton, if it were up to me, she'd be in a damn cell with Gitmo. I would lock her up. Put her in the same cell as Trump. Would that be awesome? No, that'd be
That'd be
freaking.
great.
She talks a lot about women and feminism and women hold up half the world and it takes a village. And maybe I've missed something, but I've seen a lot of pictures, unless they're Photoshopped, with women in Gaza who are being killed, whose children are being killed, who are being destroyed, who are alleged to be victims of sex crimes, who are suffering from famine, who are watching their children die, who are having to endure surgeries without anesthetic. And Hillary Clinton never talks about that. Hillary Clinton doesn't talk about women in any inconvenient way. She doesn't talk about working class women. She doesn't talk about black women. In fact, she calls blacks super predators, right?
Right.
And if we're going to talk about Mother's Day, one of the goals of green and red, obviously, is to radicalize everything, right? Everything's political and everything could have a radical interpretation tied to it. And Mother's Day is an easy one. If you're going to celebrate the role of women, as good socialists should, then you can't let these faux feminist, radical, liberal, whatever you want to call them, like Hillary Clinton, define that. And I think it's particularly disgusting now to see how many women who claim that they would become ungovernable if Roe v. Wade were overturned are now backing Biden. And they're, and we totally, oh, go ahead.
No, you finish. I have something.
Well, I was going to say, like, you and I totally agree with their emphasis on abortion rights, absolutely, unconditionally. But they're talking about this merely as an electoral strategy, but ignoring all the things that this administration has done, which have damaged women, whether it be COVID. There have been like a million deaths by COVID since Biden became president, by problems with healthcare, student debt, and of course, these wars, and especially in Gaza, where 40,000 people have already been killed, maybe more, because who knows what's in the rubble. And women in particular have carried a heavy burden in that. And if you're going to call yourself a feminist, then celebrate Mother's Day, then the mothers of Gaza, right? And I've seen Zionist propaganda, which says these aren't progressive women. They're anti-abortion and they wear a hijab and they're obedient to men and blah, blah, blah. These are liberals who are using these kinds of ethnic and racial condescending tropes to define women in the Middle East. And it's just utterly repulsive and disgusting. So happy Mother's Day, for what it's worth, to the women of Palestine, right? Who really deserve and need our support. And as far as Hillary Clinton goes, I just, every time she opens her mouth, it's just more despicable. Anyway, that's my love letter to Hillary. Happy Mother's Day, Hillary.
The one thing I would throw out there is that calling for people to be ungovernable, which the Democrats actually do everything to prevent anyone from being ungovernable on anything unless it's at the ballot box. People are being actually ungovernable in this moment. That's the sort of uprising we're seeing in the United States around Gaza, which is, you're right, a disproportionate attack on women and children of Gaza. 15,000, besides 40,000 being dead, 15,000 of them are children. And Hillary probably, if the youth of today, who she says are very ignorant about the Middle East, actually knew that much about the history of the Middle East, and they'd never want anything to do with Hillary Clinton, and they'd want to hold her accountable for all her war crimes, right?
And that's condescending bullshit that I've seen all over Fox News and among the right wingers, the crazy right wingers. These kids don't know anything. They're being manipulated. Like, I look at, like, the
University. It's Iran. There's all these Iranian agents, apparently, at Columbia.
Yeah. Oh, is it? Is it Iranian now?
Yeah.
University of Houston at an encampment. Those are like history students. Like, I spotted half the kids. And every image or video I've seen of these campus protests, I would guess that a majority, actually, I think, are female. So right. Women get it. Women understand that Hillary Clinton knows the truth. She just doesn't give a shit. But these kids know what's going on. Hillary Clinton is just repulsive. And for her to become this icon of liberal feminism, what's disgusting, but it also tells you what you need to know. Liberals have really laid bare what they're all about, right? As they say in Texas, they've shown their ass, right?
Yeah.
And we now know what they are. They're more concerned about campus protests than they are about this destruction and death in Gaza. They're more concerned about civility. They don't care that police are going in and just barreling into students and beating the hell out of them. And for them to then claim that they're feminist and they're in favor of the children. They're always talking about the children and the babies and school shootings and all that. As horrible as school shootings are, like, Gaza is enduring a school shooting like every freaking minute. There's 20 people in Gaza killed every minute, right?
Yeah.
And Hillary Clinton has always been this condescending, elitist, super ambitious, horrible individual, like her husband, like Obama, lesser evil Joe Biden. When not long ago, somebody said something about people don't like Biden. You have two choices. Get over it. Who the hell is she to be fucking condescending and scolding and chastising people? She should be shutting the hell up. She should be just shutting up, collecting her damn hedge fund checks for speaking to Goldman Sachs and whatever, and just shut up. Just shut up and send her away. Send her away. If we get enough money at Green or Red, we could start a Send Hillary to Gitmo fund or Send Hillary Anywhere fund.
Yeah, right. The Republicans are trying to pass a bill where they're just going to send all the protesting students to Gaza. So
it was funny. One of the guys said they wouldn't survive there for a day. It's like, why don't we get all these rich guys and put them in one of the tenements that their friends like own, right? In New York or Philly or whatever. Yeah. Let them go out on the streets, deal with fentanyl, deal with all this shit. How long would they last? Put Matt Gaetz on the street or Mike Johnson.
They wouldn't last very long.
No.
And going along with this rant, one of the big news items this week was the interview that Biden gave the CNN last night, where he said that if the Israelis went into Rafah, he'd cut off those weapons that he does that the administration doesn't think should be used in dense population areas like Gaza, like Rafah, which is there's so much blood on his hands. And even going back before he was president of the United States, as Vice President Bibi Netanyahu used to tell Biden that he considered him part of his family. And this whole generation of US politicians, whether it's like Hillary or Obama or Biden, are like they'll never break with Israel. And I know it's just like a sort of at this point, it's nothing but just like this sad, heartbreaking moment. And then these people just are perpetuating it and then lying to us about it.
It's performative bullshit. It reminds me, Richard Pryor used to have a great joke in his act. His wife came home and found him in bed with another woman and got very upset. And he grabs her and says, "Baby, who are you going to believe, me or your lying eyes?" That's fine, right? Who are you going to believe, me or your lying eyes, right? In fact, it's all performative bullshit. How many times has he said he's going to get tough? Reminds me of the great scene in with Ned Beatty in Back to School, right? When Philip, the econ professor, says, "What are you going to do about Rodney?" He says, "What do you want me to do, Phil? Torture him?" And this is about what am I supposed to do with Beatty? Torture him? It's performative bullshit. And today, John Kirby, the State Department spokesman, said, "Oh no, we're not going to. Israel's going to get all the weapons it needs, right?" And every time Biden sets up a green, a red light, this is why when everyone says, "Oh, but like some of these so-called lefty that people love, like Dan Johnstone, have no idea how she became famous, Aaron Mate, all these people, all Biden has to do is make one phone call." Like these people, I don't think understand the world, and I'm not trying to brag here, but I have studied it for a little bit. That's not the way politics work. You get to a certain point where the client actually has leverage over the patron, right? Because the United States is in so deep. Biden has received more AIPAC money than any politician in history. The United States, inflation adjusted, has sent maybe a half trillion to Israel. It may be more than that because who knows how much money is undercover and covert ops, black money, as they would call it. Biden is never going to bail out, and Netanyahu and Israel knows that, and Biden can't do it, right? There's an issue of credibility. There's an issue of a very important constituency, and I'm not just talking about AIPAC. I'm talking about their entire conception of the world in this so-called rules-based international order. If Palestine wins, we remember what JFK, that was his fear with Cuba, right? If Cuba wins, then the rest of the world will see that. And say, hey, we can do that too, right? The fear
Same
of,
with Vietnam, right?
yeah, and Vietnam, you have this credibility, right? We want our friends to trust us and we want our enemies to fear us. If Palestine were to win, what kind of message does that send to the entire world, basically, right? Everywhere you're saying, okay, this is not an invincible country. The empire is, in fact, crumbling, right? The fact that look at Russia and Ukraine, and we need to talk more about that because that's been thrown aside, right? But Russia is in pretty firm position right now, right? Ukraine has been funded with I forget how many billions of dollars, NATO money, US money, weapons. It's in an alliance. It's not in the alliance, but it connected to an alliance of 31 states that surrounds one country, and they're still failing. United States is losing in Ukraine, right? Which I didn't think was possible, right? I didn't think it would win, but I think it would lose, right? The world now is looking at the United States when it's the emperor is losing his clothes, right? He's naked. And if Palestine were to succeed, then can you imagine the message that sends to the entire world about the USA? What did Mao Zedong said the United States was a paper tiger, right? Very famously in the 60s, right? And to a large degree, I think we're seeing that now, right?
And the other thing, and we did shows on this when we were a little bit more focused on some of our Ukraine episodes. When we look at the countries that are supporting the US and Israel and Ukraine, they're like global north industrialized countries. It's like Europe, it's like Western Europe, East Central Europe, Eastern Europe, Japan, South Korea. But much of the rest of the world has not lined up behind the US like they had hoped. China, India,
Oh, yeah.
much of Latin America. And very similar with Palestine, that I think the president of Colombia actually came out and said that if we lose Palestine, we lose the world. And while maybe governments are still like shifting around on the sort of Gaza issue, the people in the street are in these, and not just in the US, are making like a lot of noise about this,
Yeah.
just like they were around Ukraine. Even like people in the street in European countries were actually making a lot of noise about the war in Ukraine and how they didn't want this war on their front porch, how it was like driving up the cost of energy, how it was wrecking their economies and things like that. And so the US still has to maintain this narrative or whatever you want to call it of we're the superpower, but then it's clear that they can't even make Netanyahu do what they want. So
Yeah, this is Cold War politics. And when it comes to Palestine, too, even these governments in Europe, which are following America's lead, the Germans, especially the French, the Italians, they're engaging in repressive policies. They're banning the British, they're banning people from speaking, they're sending people out to dismantle encampments. In Antwerp, they beat up protesters last night. But the so-called street, the popular opinion, is pro-Palestinian, even in those places. There's a huge, and then you have places like Ireland, Spain, which are openly pro-Palestinian, the governments there are, right? And so, yeah, Biden, and this also shows Biden is a man of the 1970s. I would say he's Scoop Jackson. Somebody said he's LBJ. Now, LBJ is a million times smarter than Joe Biden could ever be. He's basically Scoop Jackson, but not without the same domestic reform programs. But he's a guy from the 70s who sees the world as a Sollozzo said to Michael Corleone, pensée ancienne. He's a product of old thinking, right? And this is Biden. He's never moved beyond the 70s and 80s. And
just to
that's where
do a
he's been.
pitch for one of our shows from last year, check out our interview with James Risen when we talked about Frank Church, who mentored, was one of Biden's mentors in the early days of him being in the Senate. But we had some good conversation back and forth about Biden in his early days too. You should totally check out that episode.
A lot of people on the left hate Biden, and I think with good reason. And I'm really venomous toward him. And it's not just about this. I mean, like, I'm old. I'm an old man. So I've followed Biden a long time. And this is who he is. Like the idea that somehow people thought he was, I understand the need to get rid of Trump in 2020. I have no issue with that. I will never criticize anybody for voting for him in 2020 because I thought it was a chance to like just buy time and give you 4 years without Trump. But obviously, a lot of people on the left didn't do that. And now they're back to, we go to vote. It's the most important election of our lifetime. But Biden is just an old man in that regard. In the 80s, he was against Contra funding, but every time he did it, he would talk about the communists and he would talk about Ortega. I remember him speaking once, like, I would tell Danny Boy this and I would tell Danny Boy that and when El Salvador and blah, blah, blah. This is who he is. He supports wars. He supports defense building. He's against any kind of healthcare program. He is the epitome of a Cold War liberal, a Cold War hawk. He is JFK. He really is JFK.
His hero
Which he would take as a compliment. Let him have it.
probably has a hole in his head too. Hey folks, we just went and did our weekly rant about the sort of liberal leadership and how they've led us to this horrendous moment. And I do have to say that in all of my years of doing organizing work and political work, I've never been more ashamed to a citizen of this country. And that includes 8 years of Bush and 4 years of Trump, with what the Biden administration and this sort of liberal political class is doing to the people of Gaza, and how they're and what they're doing to people who are rising up, speaking out about it. There's a lot of courage going on out there, both in Gaza and in the US and campuses all over the world. And so I do want to say that and keep fighting, but I'm going to just pass it to Bob.
Yeah, I think
And
the last
I
thing.
will say things are going to get worse before they get better in Gaza. And so you should all just prepare for that, and we'll be talking about that going forward.
And they're going to get worse here too. I think the other point I want to leave with, because it's important, is we are appropriately, focused on Gaza and the student protest. And as I said, the student protests are very important, but also like the ruling class is using that as a distraction away from what Israel is doing on a daily basis. But there's so much more going on in the world that we're not even talking about it all. For one thing, this is an issue very important to me. Cuba is undergoing its worst economic crisis since the difficult period in the 80s after the Soviet Union, 80s and 90s after the Soviet Union, after Gorbachev took over and the Soviet Union fell apart. Cuba is suffering now. They have malnutrition. There are food shortages. It is a terribly poor place. And the U.S. embargo, think of what the United States is doing in Gaza by helping subsidize this famine in Gaza. They've been doing that in Cuba since 19 for 64 years, right? So 63 years. It's important to keep in mind this is going on elsewhere. Haiti is in turmoil right now, which the US media doesn't really cover. This is a process. The United States has been in control of Haiti for a long time. It's essentially a very kind of a crude colonial relationship in a lot of ways. There are these gangs there. Every time there's been a hint of a progressive government, the United States has scuttled it, including Bill and Hillary, right? So there are issues there that we're not talking about. Within the region, which in the Middle East, Iran, the United States is still saber rallying against Iran. Yemen, which has really put up a valiant defense of the Palestinians. Several countries in Africa right now have been in upheaval with U.S. involvement. And then, of course, there's Ukraine and Russia.
Argentina is actually going through a lot of unrest right now, too.
Argentina, Palestine, and Gaza clearly hold our attention as they should. These are, I remember when it really put me off in 2022 when people were saying Ukraine is the new Spanish Civil War, which is just utterly disgusting for a lot of reasons, right? Gaza, Palestine is the Spanish Civil War. If you're going to make that one, that's not even a great comparison. But clearly, I think Palestine is a cause around the world, around which the world has rallied in ways that not seen. And there was significant support for Nicaragua and stuff, but it was always limited. But now we're seeing in full this full-throated defense of Palestine. And we're also seeing what the U.S. empire is about, right? They're rejecting not just the rules of international law with regard to genocide, with regard to civilian deaths, attacking hospitals, killing journalists, killing medical personnel, killing children, right? We're seeing all that, right? And we're seeing the United States provide political cover at the United Nations. We're seeing them simply reject International Court of Justice and international tribunals. The United States helped craft the creation of a human rights law after World War II at Nuremberg and elsewhere. And the United States is rejecting it. They're just simply saying, we're not going to abide by that. And in fact, they're threatening these institutions that if they were to issue a warrant for Netanyahu, which the Israelis are apparently legitimately afraid of, right?
He
Although I suspect that.
should be. He's a fucking piece of shit,
Although
man.
I would think like half of them would love it because he's not there. That's the other thing. In Israel, Netanyahu, not necessarily for what he's doing in Gaza, but for a lot of reasons, is very unpopular too. And there are a lot of people in Israel who'd like to see him gone too. The United States is providing a lifeline for that. Let's not make any illusions. Biden says this is an election to save democracy. You just can't make that argument. He's not the lesser evil. He's not a decent, he's a decent man. That are like, no, he's a killer. He is a war criminal. He is a killer. And he's rising up the ranks fairly quickly. Like LBJ was handed a shitty situation, a horrific situation by JFK, and he really made the worst of it, right? Biden entered into this. Biden instigated it. Biden was there at the first stage, at the first steps of it. Hell, you could even argue that Vietnam was passed on by the French, right? This one is Biden's. He owns it. His fingerprints are all over it. He and Blinken and Sullivan and Kirby. And what's the press secretary's name? I forget. And Linda is at Greenfield at the United Nations. They all are war criminals. They all have huge bloody hands.
Yeah.
And that's the key one. But don't be distracted. This is going on all over. Palestine is clearly the most horrific example of it. But this is all of these places have made in the USA stamped on them. And let us not forget, it's not like the US is uniquely evil. It's just it's an empire. It's the biggest country. It's the 800-pound whatever in the room.
The US has an active military presence in something like 120 countries and
800
earned.
and some bases.
Yep. And
Some bases.
are engaged in active conflict in at least seven countries. That probably didn't even count Gaza because we don't have American troops on the ground that we know of.
Yeah.
But we're engaged in active conflict in seven different countries around the world.
Yeah, I guess my last thought here would be to invoke the famous words of Martin Luther King on April 4th, 1967, when asked like why he doesn't criticize the Vietnamese. He said they're responsible for their part of it. He said, but I'm directing my attention at the most violent, the greatest purveyor of violence in the world today, my own government. And I don't think that certainly hasn't changed. And I'm sure if MLK was around right now, well, if he was around right now, the liberals would hate him, right? They would cancel him. But I think he would clearly say that the United States government is the greatest purveyor of violence in the world today. And that's our task. It's, and I don't think this is a problem, and this is just an opinion. I don't think this is a problem we can vote our way out of. I really don't believe that. This is not like the most important ever election, make sure you vote. No, it's far too systemic and far too deep, and it's metastasized far too much to simply go out and vote in November to fix this. It just, I think we're going to be in the streets no matter what. We're going to be in the streets no matter what. So at that point, you just, no, go ahead. I just
Was gonna say, like Stokely said, organize.
organize, right? And get out there and have each other's backs and do what you can. It's rough. But yeah, when you're in the belly of the beast, right? The greatest purveyor of violence in the world today, our task is to do what we can here. And these college kids, like I said, are like really inspirational. They're really great. And so let's also support them. And support the Green and Red podcast while you're at it.
Yeah. Speaking of which, I've been listening to the grim rantings of the Green and Red podcast today. If you like what you're hearing and want to buy some of our swag, you can buy that fancy hat that Bob has on right now, which is a Green and Red trucker cap for $25. Just email us at greenredpodcast@gmail.com, and we'll hook you up. Or if you want to buy Bob's first book, Masters of War, for $35, not buy it, donate and get a copy. Yeah. Hit us up at greenredpodcast@gmail.com.
Seymour Hersh liked it.
Yeah, Seymour Hersh liked it. Noam Chomsky liked it. We have some pretty good, we have some good,
pretty, we don't good need anybody else at that point, right?
Yeah, we have some pretty good references. If you just want to give us straight up money, go to greenredpodcast.org and hit the support button or become a patron at patreon.com/greenredpodcast. And as always, if you like what you hear and check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, if you're on YouTube, hit that subscribe button. If you're listening to us on an audio platform, give us a rate and review. And we will talk to you again soon. And as always, misbehave, make a lot of trouble. We will be. And we hope to talk to you all again soon.
Happy Mother's Day.
And happy Mother's Day.
First thing I remember knowing is a lonesome whistle blowing and a youngin's dream of growing up to ride on a freight train leaving town, not knowing where I'm bound, no one to change my mind. Mama tried. The one and only rebel child from a family meek and mild, my mama seemed to know what lay in store. Despite all my Sunday learning, with the bad I kept on turning till mama couldn't hold me anymore. And I turned 21 in prison, doing life without parole. No one could steer me right, but mama tried, mama tried, mama tried to raise me better. But her pleading I denied, that leaves only me to blame, 'cause mama tried.